All right, ready? I'm curious, what did you buy? What is this? Wow, you've got some serious labeling to do, have you? Professional. Is it one of the thermal ones? Yeah, they're good. Yeah. Okay, let's start. Right. So one announcement. You ready, guys? Come on, settle down. So the assignment will be available later today on the web page for the course. So you know, don't all rush at the same time. I'm sure you're all very eager to do the assignment. So it's going to be about Davis, the DPLL, and WorkSat. And it's in Haskell, like I said before. So, yes, so. And the other thing is that there's going to be a lecture on the assignment next week, next Tuesday, which basically will try to give you some pointers and a few hints here and there. You can ask questions about things. So what you should do, you know, is to try and download the assignment sheet. Basically, you should try and start working on it before the lecture if you can, right? So because it's about material we've already covered, guys. So anyway, so it will be available later today. So what we're going to do today, we're going to look at smart searching using constraints. So the whole area of constraint satisfaction problems is a very well understood area. It's a very active area of research, where people are spending a lot of time because there's a lot of money involved, because a lot of problems are actually constraint satisfaction problems. And one of the very well-known constraint satisfaction problems that, you know, that you may have, you know, can anybody name a well-known constraint satisfaction problem? Yeah, but something more like day-to-day, real life. How many traveling salesmen do you know? But it's true. Now, one which is really day-to-day is timetabling, right? You all know, every year there's this problem, you know, for instance, in terms of trying to timetable the courses and to get you guys in tutorial groups and all this. It's a very, very difficult problem. And this is a constraint satisfaction problem, because different people are going to have different constraints. You all know this, right? You're assigned to various tutorial groups sort of like based on what courses you may be taking, but then you take a course and suddenly you have an extra constraint and you can't go to a particular group, so you need to go to another one. And the question is, are there general algorithms that can help to solve at least classes of these constraint satisfaction problems and say, okay, I can come up with a solution that's going to be complete, that's, you know, a proper solution that's going to satisfy everybody. And we all know, right, the more of you there are, the harder it is to make it, you know, to actually be able to make everybody happy. Try to please everybody and you please nobody. Anyway, so this is what we're going to look at. So it's section 6.1 to 6.3 of Russell and Norvig. So the way I'm going to present it, it's slightly different from Russell and Norvig. It's the same material, right, but I'm going to present it with, you know, if you read in Russell and Norvig, you see they present one bit which I present at the end, right at the beginning. Yeah, but that's just a matter of presentation. So anyway, okay? So what we're going to look at are these constraint satisfaction problems known as CSPs. So they're also very well, you know, they happen all the time when it comes to, say, hardware circuits, for instance. These are also things you need to satisfy very, they tend to be constraint satisfaction problems. We're going to look at a particular type of search, sort of general and uninformed search. So basically no heuristics really in there. Well, not strictly speaking. We're going to look at backtracking search, which is basically going to be used for this. Most of it is general kind of ways. It's general approach to dealing with many of these problems. And we're going to look at whether there are ways of making this a bit more efficient. So there are choice modes that we have when we're dealing with these kind of problems. Okay? So what are these? Well, in terms of we contrast this with, say, a standard search problem. So generally, a standard search problem is that what you have is that the state is treated as a black box, right? So you don't need to know exactly whether it's implemented as a list, as a record, or whatever. So any data structure that supports a successor function, right? You remember, successor functions unfold, right? And heuristic functions, for instance, because we're going to see this, for instance, in terms of coming up with a cost, right? And the goal test, that's basically all you need, right? Whereas in CSPs, things are slightly different. You have this notion of variables, right? So we can call them, for instance, xi, right? So you're going to define the states by taking values from a domain di, some domain. So for instance, I could say my variable is going to be a natural number, right? And it's going to take values from 0 to whatever, right? So from the domain of natural numbers, right? So that's a variable, right? And there are going to be constraints like this on these variables. And constraints are going to range from, you know, depending on the types that we have. So if it's numbers, it could be equality, inequalities, et cetera, et cetera, right? And the goal test is a set of constraints that's going to specify allowable combinations of values for subsets of these variables, right? So that's the goal test. We're going to say, okay, I want these variables to be able to have these values. Can they all have these values subject to the constraints that I've imposed on them, right? I want X to be blue, and I want Y to be red. Is it possible to have these two together? Right, but then we'll see in particular examples that, you know, depends what the problem is. It may not be possible to have these at the same time. It may not be satisfiable, right? So what we want is to allow useful general purpose algorithms, right? This is the backtracking search, like a depth-first algorithm, with more power than standard search algorithms. So we want general algorithms that we can sort of, that we can adapt the sort of standard search algorithm to work with these, right? So that we can actually solve these problems, or at least try to solve these problems. Okay? So here's our running example for this particular lecture. We're going to assume we have a map of Australia like this, and it's sort of broken down into the various territories. We have like Western Australia, Northern Territory, South Australia, Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, and Tasmania, right? Tasmania sitting on its own. And we're going to assume we're going to try and color this map, right? With three colors. Red, green, and blue. So what we're going to say is that we're going to have a variable for each one of these territories. So WA stands for this, Northern Territory for that, NT for this, sorry, Q for Queensland, et cetera, right? So we're just going to use the initials. And we're going to say the domain that we can take for these particular variables are going to be red, green, and blue, right? What we're trying to say, the question we're trying to ask is that, is there a way of coloring this map such that no two neighbors have the same color? You want to be able to distinguish all the colors, right? So how do we do this? Adjacent regions must have different colors. That's the constraints that we're going to have, and we need to represent this. So for instance, what we could say is that in the final problem, it's not the case that anything such as this variable for this cannot be equal to this variable there, right? Because they're adjacent. And this variable... That's all right? And this variable cannot be equal to this particular variable there. Yeah. You really, that's one way of interrupting the lecture. You can just stand in front of it and that'll be it. So this one cannot be equal to this one, right? You're happy with this, right? So a variable for each of the particular bits there. It's a very visual example. And we're going to say there are three colors and we just want to be able to express the constraints. Okay, so we can write it like this if we have a language of equal and not equal. Or we could say that we want, so that's a negative way of expressing it in a way, and that's a more positive way of expressing it. We want to say that WNT has to be in that set. So this one is more like an enumeration. This one is more abstract, right? So it could be that we just want to say that it's going to take values from this pair, from this set of pairs, right? That's also another way of specifying the same constraint. As you can see, this one is... Can you see what the problem would be? What would be the problem? Well, in this case, not necessarily, but what would be generally a problem if, you know, you had to enumerate everything? Yeah, the domain could be infinite. Well, what if your domain is infinite? It's like, you know, what if it's possible to come up with an infinite number of colors? Then you would have to specify each one of these. It's much easier to specify it like that, right? Yeah, so it's compact, much more compact and much more abstract. But there are some problems which can be more like practical kind of issues. Okay, so we're going to try and color our map. We've got the variables, we've got the domains from which they can take values, and we've got the constraints. Right, so that's the example. Right, so here's a particular solution there. Right, you know, there may be more than one solution, but that's one solution that satisfies the constraint. So the solutions that we want are those that are going complete, basically come up with a value for all the variables, and consistent with the assignments, basically consistent. Basically, meaning you don't violate any of the constraints, right? And complete and consistent assignments, right? Sorry. So in this case, we can make this one red, this one green, this one blue. right, blah, blah, etc. And this one, we could make it whatever color we want because it's not got any neighbors there, right, really. Okay? That's just a particular solution that you can come up with. You can come up with more than one solution for this, obviously. You can swap colors around, right? But that's one possibility. Okay, but how do we come up with this? And, you know, how do we make sure we come up with something like this fast? This is a small problem. It's fairly easy, right? So one thing that you tend to do very often for these kind of problems is to come up with a graphical representation for this, what's known as a constraint graph, right? So in a binary constraint satisfaction problem, each constraint is going to relate to variables, right? So we can say, you know, mention this afterwards. So in a binary CSP, each constraint relates to variables. So you're going to have two variables and an arc between them. So the arc is going to represent the constraint, right? And the nodes are going to represent the variables. So this is one particular graphical representation for our problem, right? So if you remember, this is the map. This is South Australia there, right? And its constraints are going to be on all its neighbors, all five neighbors there, right? Because if it's a particular color, the others cannot be that same color, right? So this is the way, this is why you can see it in the graph there. It's got an arc between it and all the and five others except Tasmania, right? And if you look at Victoria, so Victoria there has a constraint on New South Wales, that the only one, and also on South Australia. So Victoria, this and this, right? Etc. So that's a graphical way of representing the same problem that we had before, the problem that we have, basically, right? So the nodes are going to be the variables, and the arcs are going to say there's something going on between these two that's going to be a constraint that I have to make sure that I don't violate, okay? All right. And you can see this graph is not fully connected because this one, this is still a whole graph there, right? The T is just on its own. It has no constraints on it whatsoever, and it doesn't impose any constraint on anybody. So this is the whole graph. Okay, it does look weird, but it's perfectly possible to have no edges coming or going from a particular vertex. All right. So now, having said this, one thing relates to what I said just before. So there are varieties of CSPs, right? So there are those which are going to be on discrete domains versus those which are going to be on continuous domains. But even when it's discrete domains, we're going to have what's known as finite domain problems and those which have infinite domains. A finite domain problem is the one we're looking at, for instance, right? We only have three colors, right? So you have n variables, and the domain size is going to be of size d. So what's going to happen in this case, at worst, what you have to do is to do the whole tree to be able to assign things. So you're going to have order of d to the n assignment. Right? So you have a domain of size d. At worst, right, you're going to try everything to try and come up with a solution. So in this case, for our particular map coloring, it's 3 to the, how many variables are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. 3 to the 7 at worst. But we're going to see it's much less than this for this problem. So that's the worst case. Possible assignments in terms of coming up with a solution. If you had to enumerate all possible ones and then pick the ones that actually satisfy the constraint, one that satisfies the constraint. So it should remind you of truth tables. So okay. So then you also have like Boolean CSPs, right? Which are those which just variables are going to just take true or false. So then it's 2 to the n, right? And it's Boolean satisfiability including that. So that's NP complete. This is just for information. Right, so these are the finite domains one, for instance. But we also very often have what's known as infinite domain problems, right? So where it can take values, infinitely many so value, right? Along in a set that's infinite. So if we're talking about integers, well, you're only limited in theory, in practice, by the size of by machine arithmetic in your computer, right? But you know, that's already a lot. So that's but in principle it's infinite, right? On paper. And strings, whatever strings you want to come up with, right? So it could be that it's something like a job scheduling, variables of start and end of days for each job, right? So for instance, something like that. So, you know, it could be like I need a constraint language. So in this case, what happens is that things become interesting because you need something more. You can't just say, you know, you don't just need equality, for instance, right? You may need inequality, but you also need like arithmetic, like plus, and all these kind of operations, right? So this would be a variable plus 5. It's got to be less than or equal to start. So that's just particular way of, you know, specifying a particular constraint. For instance, that just would be one example. So if you look in Russell and Novick, there's a nice work example kind of, you know, case study that they go through with these kind of things. So you should have a look and read this, right? But what I want to emphasize here is that you can sort of have discrete variables and continuous variables, as you would expect, right? And even in your discrete variables, you can have finite domains and infinite domain problems. And these are going to be different depending, and you know, it's going to introduce kind of differences in terms of how you tackle the various problems. And for continuous variables, what do we mean? Anything where you have to measure time, speed, pressure, whatever, things like that, which are measurements that need real values, right? So for instance, it could be like the start time and the end time for the Hubble Space Telescope observations. These have serious constraints on these because different people want to use the same thing, right? Different research groups and all this, so they all have to try and get this to work, right? And also it depends on what you want to observe at a particular time and all this. And this can be like expressed as linear constraints. Many things can be of, very often these things can be expressed as linear constraints. Linear constraints means you don't multiply two variables. You're not going to have in your constraint, you know, you're not going to have x times y is less than z. You're going to have at most multiplication by a constant value, say 3x is less than z, for instance, right? And these are quite interesting because they are solvable in polynomial time by linear programming. So if any of you does anything to do with later on with operations research or any of these kind of things, you come across linear programming all the time. It's very well known, it's very well understood, and it's, you know, there's some nice algorithms. Any of you ever heard of simplex algorithm? Yeah, so simplex and all this, so for linear programming. So, but anyway, this is just to tell you that, you know, if you have the kind of linear constraints problems where you only have linear inequality, you have inequality or equality, and you don't multiply two variables together, these can be solved fairly quickly, right? So polynomial time by linear programming. Anyway, so that's just to give you a taste. There's more discussion of this in Russell and Norvig, and you should read a bit more about this. But I want to introduce the various bits so that we can look at the algorithm here. Okay, so what are the varieties? So these are varieties of problems. What are the varieties of constraints? There are all sorts of constraints, and they're given different names. So one could be just these unary constraints, right, where you say, okay, a particular variable cannot take a particular value, for instance, right? So it involves a single variable. So for instance, you can say that South Australia cannot be green, right? Something like that, or anything like this. So that's only going to involve one variable. Or you could have binary constraints like we've seen. So these involve pairs of variables, right? So you could say like South Australia and Western Australia cannot be the same color, right? So they cannot be colored the same with the same color on the map, right? Or they can't take, basically they can't take the same value, right? But you can also have what's known as higher constraints. So these involve three or more variables. We'll see an example next, right? So if you have more free, so they're sometimes known as higher order constraint. And if you have something which can involve kind of arbitrary number of constraints depending on whatever the problem, you come up with something like this, we'll see an example. So these are sometimes known as global constraints. Sometimes there's not much distinction between these two, but you know, that's arbitrary, but this is free or more variables. So in a way you can see that they're very similar in that way. Right, so an arbitrary number, so you know, for instance, it could be a constraint of a set, right? Of values. So here's a particular example of a higher order, and well, it's actually the constraint in this case is a global constraint because we're just saying all these variables are going to be different. There could be arbitrary many there, right? Right. So, but it's also at the same time it's also a higher order constraint. So here's a particular example. So this is something where maybe some of you have seen where you're supposed to assign values to these letters which are distinct for each letter, right? Such that if you add these values there, you get 4. Right, so the idea is that you have these various variables there, right? You're going to have, give values between 0 and 9 for these, right? And when you add it, it has to add up arithmetically, right? And this is the domain there. So value from 0 to 9, these are all the variables there that we can see. But any of you who's done any arithmetic, hopefully you've all done arithmetic, right? You all know about adding two values. Usually you have what's called a, what is it called? If I add 7 and 8 here, yeah, you have a carry, right? So the carry are going to be sometimes known as these hidden variables that you need to add to the problem. You don't see them initially. So in this case, we're going to have a carry for tens, this one, a carry for hundreds, and a carry for thousands. So we've got some constraints on this. We're saying that we're not going to have a zero there, for instance, right? And these two can't be zero. So these are, you're forced to have 3-digit numbers and a four digit solution, right? So what we're saying is that how do we express this as a constraint on these letters there? Well, using arithmetic, what we know about arithmetic, such that this is arithmetically correct, is that if we add 0, O and O, not 0, O and O, then it's equal to R plus some carry multiplied by 10, right? You all happy with this? This is the first bit there, right? So this is the carry that we have. Then what do we do in the second row? In the second column, we take the carry, we add it to W and W, that's going to be equal to U plus some other carry possibly. So remember, the carry could be 0, right? It could be if this is 2 and 2, then it's just 4. So this is x1 will just be 0, right? So this is just coming up with a general way of expressing this problem in a particular arithmetic language there, right? So a higher order kind of, so a crypto arithmetic, so something which is a higher order. So, and then we can keep going. We can say, okay, so we've got this. If I add T and T, right, plus I have X2 as the carry coming from there, then it's going to be the same as this O, right, plus 10 times X3, which is another carry that's possible. It may be there, it may not be there. So then what I just say is that the carry itself, that any carry that I have from this is just going to be F, right? That's what this says here, and we have these two that I mentioned already. Are you all happy with this? So the question is, how do you go about solving this? Right, so you need to be able to come up with a way of solving this, and without, you know, such that you get an answer that's consistent with all the particular constraints. I'm not saying you have to do this in your head, right? So the thing to bear in mind is that in this case, we need to have an augmented graph. We can't just have a normal constraint graph because we have these higher order kind of constraints, right? So what we introduce is what's known as a hypernode. These are the squares there. So these things are still there. So the hypernode is going to basically capture the notion of an n-ary constraint. Right, so it's going to say, okay, there's a constraint between x1, there's one between x1, r, and o. This is the for the first one, right? And you can also capture more than this, right? So you can, you know, there's a constraint between o again, and there's one between t, x2, and x3. Where's that? This one, right? So that's just a way of representing something which has more than two, more than binary constraints. It's a hypergraph. But there is a theoretical result that shows that it is possible to decompose any of these into a, you can rearrange this and decompose this problem into a binary one. So you should read this up a little bit in Russell and Norvig. It is, in theory, possible to do this, right? But what happens, what would happen when you do this, though, usually? You end up with a big graph, so basically many more constraints. So there's no free lunch. Right? So you may be able to convert it to a binary problem, but what this means is that you'll end up with, you know, maybe in this case you have four constraints, but you'll end up with many more constraints. Well, not many, you will, definitely will. So that's one thing. But what this is supposed to show is that it is possible for you to represent a higher order problem, something where you have more than two constraints. But there is a result that says that it is possible for you to reduce something like this into a binary one. I'm trying to remember whether I set an exam question once on something like this. I think I did. So you should check. Right. So how about some real-world CSPs? So because if we assume this is only good for games and, you know, your phone or whatever, you know, what do we do, need to deal with? I mentioned this already. So there are all these kind of things such as assignment problems. So we have this, you know, for us, you know, who is going to teach what? So every year in informatics, right, you may think, you know, it's arbitrary who gets to teach what. The whole process of who's going to be teaching what the next year starts, well, it's already started. It started in around November. For next year, because what you need to take into account, some people may be on sabbatical, some people may be on fellowship, some people may have taught a course for 5 years or whatever, 3 years, and they don't want to teach anymore. So you need to start arranging very early, and who's going to be teaching what. And some people, you definitely don't want them to teach particular classes, even though they may want to, because everybody will leave. So there are these, it's true, but you didn't hear it from me, but it's true. So there is that as well. Oh, it's being recorded, isn't it? Yeah, oh no, I never said that. Right, so who teaches what class starts very early, for instance, right? So there is all this, assignment problems. The other one that I mentioned already are these timetabling problems, right? So which class is offered when and where? So we need to decide what we're going to offer. If there's going to be only two people on a particular class, maybe we decide we're not going to offer it. And this is becoming more of an issue every year here, for instance, for timetabling problem, because we have so many courses, so many students. So this lecture last year, I was giving this in Appleton Tower, right? So this year it's in David Hume, you know, it keeps moving. So, well, it doesn't keep moving. At least this year it's moved to here because of the various constraints that need to be satisfied. So this is a particular example, and you have transportation scheduling. So you've heard of the word logistics, right? So there's a lot of this. So constraint satisfaction problem is actually huge in industry when it comes to Amazon and all these companies, because they need to be able to make sure they have fulfillment, right? That they can fulfill the orders and all this and get things from different. So they have constraints that involve the different centers that they use for sending things, for instance, right? They give you all sorts of guarantees about delivery. Any of you ever tried the, you know, guarantee next day delivery and all these kind of things? They're pretty sure they've got a problem that they've solved to be able to do this. But things go wrong with the snow and all these kind of things. Then you need to change your constraint satisfaction problem. And you have factory scheduling, et cetera, et cetera. So many real-world problems are going to involve real valued variables. Why is that? Because many real-world problems are going to involve notions such as time, right, for instance, right? you know, because that's a continuous thing, or it could involve something, if you're talking about something moving, it involves moving in space, or it could involve speed and all these kind of things. So a lot of the real world problems will be real valued variables. And this makes life, you know, more complicated even, right? The domain is definitely infinite in this case. Although, you know, sometimes there are ways of doing this, right? Because if you're talking about time, hopefully you work by chunks of one day and you can do some kind of modular arithmetic to go back, for instance. But you need to keep track of how many days you're late, for instance. Anyway, right? So how do we go about coming up with our backtracking algorithm? So let's assume we have a standard kind of search formulation. We can just sort of incrementally change it kind of thing. So we'll start with some straightforward approach and sort of adapt it. So the states are going to be defined by the values that have been assigned so far to your variables, right? So remember, you have your set of variables, you have their domains, you want to give them values that are consistent, right? You want to make sure that you don't violate any of the constraints, right? So we define the states by saying, well, these are the variables we've found, so the values we've assigned so far to the variables, and we're still consistent so far. Basically, we're doing well, right? We'll keep going, and hopefully we can solve it and give a value to each of the variables that we care about. Right? So the initial state then is just kind of the empty assignment. I haven't given any value to anything. Right? So we're trying to formulate this as a standard search, you know, as a search, the way we've looked at search. So what's our successor function in this case? Well, basically it's to pick another variable, right? Pick some variable I haven't given a value to yet, so it's an assign, and pick some value for it that's not going to conflict with whatever I've done so far. Because I don't want to pick a value for something that's going to just basically collapse my problem. Right, so I want to be able to do this. It's easier said than done. But if I can't find anything that's a legal assignment, I'll just fail. Right? But fail, what's going to happen is that you can fail, but you know, in this case, we're going to look at what's known as a backtracking algorithm. So the fact that it fails here doesn't mean it necessarily fails globally. It means it could move up and start trying different assignments. Right? So the goal test would be, in this case, that the current assignment is complete. So this is just a way of formulating just the idea where you've changed the notion of a state to be variables that take values from a domain in the standard kind of search kind of framework. You have an initial state and you have a successor function and a goal test, right? So you just need to do what your successor function is just going to assign a value to a particular variable you pick that's not been assigned yet, that doesn't conflict with the constraints that you have, okay? And this is basically the same for all constraint satisfaction problems. Right? And every solution is going to appear at depth n if you have n variables, because you're trying to solve all the variables if it's a tree, right? You're going to look at each variable in turn. So what we can do is use depth first search. Okay? But the thing is, we're going to try and backtrack. So there are things that we can actually do. So we can actually change the algorithm a bit. We can say, okay, one thing that we can do is that, you know, we can say is that if we're doing variable assignments, so we're giving value to these variables, this is actually commutative, right? So this might give us a way of actually cutting down on our search space. So we know that, for instance, if we say Western Australia is red and Northern Territory is green, it's the same as saying this is green and then this is red, right? We don't want to be doing these separately because its assignment is commutative, doing one before the other. You know, it's the same thing when you're saying this, then this, the same as this, the end product is the same, right? So basically, what we can do if we're saying this is that we only need to consider assignment to a single variable at each node. So we don't need to look at both of these, right? So we can say we're going to look at a particular variable at a node. So what this means is that the branching factor then becomes just the size of your domain. Here's my node. I pick a particular state. I want to color it. What's the branching factor? Right, it's just going to be the number of values that I have for it in my, you know, red, green, blue. I have three choices, right? So in this case, so basically, so, and then they're going to be d to the n leaves, right? Because in the worst case, right? So because this is d is the size of the domain, right? If I had to do everything, and n is the number of variables that I have, so it'd be 3 to the 7, like I said before, right? So one node at a time, we're going to build a tree. So it's going to be a depth-first search for CSPs with single variable assignment. And that's going to be known as a backtracking search. We're going to implement it as a backtracking search, meaning that, you know, you do something, if you fail, you can change your selection and go for a different assignment. So backtracking search is just the basic uninformed algorithm for CSPs. That's what's used for it most of the time. And using this simple idea, you can solve the n-queen problem for n round 25, for instance, right? Which is pretty big. Okay? Any questions so far? No? Right, here's one version of the algorithm as given in Russell and Norvig, right? So it's a backtracking search. It's going to give it a CSP. It's going to return a solution of failure, right? And we're just going to call it first with no assignment. Remember, initially, there's no assignment yet, and with the CSP, right? And we're going to call this backtrack function there, which just returns a solution of failure, right? So the first thing it checks, right? If the assignment is complete, I'm done. just return the assignment. Obviously, when you're starting, the assignment is empty, you're not done, you need to go through the whole thing. And then the question is, okay, what variable do I decide to pick next? We're going to look at this in more detail soon, right? So select some unassigned variable from the CSP, and that's going to be the variable I'm going to try and give a value to that's consistent with whatever I've assigned so far. And the big question is, which variable do I pick, right? And this is where we're going to have some heuristics there to help the problem so that it's, you know, it can go more quickly, right? So that's one point there. There's one choice point there in terms of what we can do here. And then you say, okay, there's my variable, right? I've chosen some variable there. I want to assign a value to it. What value do I pick for this? If I have a choice of values for it, how do I decide which one is the one I should choose? So usually there's another point there where you say, okay, order the domain values, and for each one of them, go through it in a particular order. Hopefully there's a way of ordering these values that's going to be in increasing likelihood that you're going to solve the problem first, right? You don't want to pick really crappy values that's going to fail early. Well, no, you do. Actually, yeah, I should take this back. Forget what I just said. Maybe you sometimes you do want to fail early if it's unsatisfiable. So you're going to order this in some way or another, right? So that you can pick the value in turn so that you can go through the problem more quickly. So if the value that you pick, assuming you've come up with some kind of ordering there, is consistent with the assignment so far, then you can keep going. If it's not, right, you jump straight out there, you're going to say, okay, this value is not consistent, right? I don't want to pick this value. So it shouldn't be in the assignment, and inferences, we're going to see in a second, shouldn't be from there anyway. So I keep going for a different value, for the next value, because it's a loop there, right? So yeah, the loop goes all the way to there. So if it's consistent, right, so meaning, okay, I'm happy with this, I add it to assignment, right? And then what I do is this, there's going to be some bit there. So this is where it's changed a bit, the way it's presented in Russell Novi compared from previous edition. So what we can do some work there as well, where we can do some inference and try and see whether we can actually do some extra work after I've assigned a value to a variable. I'm going to try and see whether this assignment that I made through some inference, as opposed to just looking at some inference there, is actually good. So we're going to see this in more detail. So this can be used to impose what's known as arc consistency all the way down to the problem. You can basically do a look ahead into the problem and say, if I pick this value for this particular variable, is this going to basically in the long, you know, if I pick this value, is this going to have a chain effect, kind of a chain reaction, and result in some variable having no values left for it, for instance. So you do this in this state. And if it says, okay, there's no failure, it's not going to be the case if I pick this value that things are going to go horribly wrong by looking ahead, if I can look ahead, then I can say, okay, this, you know, the inferences that I found, they're also good, because the inference is going to try and change some of the domains of some of the variables that have not been assigned yet. We'll see this. So what you're doing, you're adding a value, you're finding a value for one variable, but you're actually doing some work here that could have an effect on the values that are available for the other variables. You could end up with a particular assignment because a variable ends up with only having one value left for it, a variable which wasn't assigned before. I don't know, hopefully become a bit clearer in a little bit, right? So that's good, and then this is the recursive call, where you call your algorithm again with the new assignment there, so you've augmented it in some way or another, hopefully. You've added this, and maybe you found some more stuff, and you call it, and you keep going, right? If, though, you fail there, then you return result. No, sorry, if you don't fail there, right, if you've backtracked it, so it's a recursive algorithm, so if you've gone for this and you find a result, and it's not a failure, then you keep going. Then you return the result, sorry. Otherwise, right, if it is a failure, you will jump out of the loop. You won't jump out of the loop. You will remove the value, and you will go for a different value. Yeah. Actually, I don't like this. It's difficult to see because the scope of the loop is all the way there. It's slightly annoying. If after all this you couldn't find any value for your variable, right, and you've done your backward your call there and you couldn't solve it, right, you mean you fail. Any question about this? We're going to look at each one of these in turn now. So we're going to look at this, and also at this. Okay, so just to give you an example before we go any further, we've used our Australian map. So let's assume we're like this to start with. One choice that I have, just to pick a particular example, okay, so I could decide to make this red, make this one green, make this one blue, right? You're all happy with this? There are three choices. If I decide I'm going to pick this variable first, there are three choices for this variable, right? What color I can make this. So let's assume I'm doing that first, I'm going to go down there. So what can I do? I can make this one green, right? I can't make it red because it's adjacent to it, right? And I could make it blue. Two choices. Happy with this? Now let's assume I pick the next variable to do, which is this one, which is what's this one? Queensland. Right. So what color can I make this? I can make this red, or I could make it blue. So far the assignment that I have for my variables in this one, if I did this, it would be consistent, right? I don't violate any of the constraints. Or if I do this one, I also don't violate any of the constraints, right? You're all happy with this? Right, so that's a possibility. But look at this problem, right? So if I look at this particular problem, what nodes can be eliminated on symmetry grounds? So if I look at this problem, if I have a solution for this, right, what does this tell you? Really, if I can make this red, right? I arbitrarily chose to make this red. I could have gone for this one, green. So if I'm able to find a solution for this, really I should be able to find a solution for that, where I start with green first, because there's no priority. All the three colors are the same, right? And or it could be, you know, there's nothing that says that Western Australia prefers red over blue, for instance, right? So basically, on the grounds of symmetry, if I'm able to solve this problem down this branch, I should be able to solve this one or that one, because there's no preference when it comes to colors for any of the variables or any of the provinces, right? You follow this? So, but look at this one. What about this one? Well, I picked green for this, but I could have picked blue. But if I can solve this one, surely I should be able to solve this one as well, right? Given the constraints that, only constraints that two adjacent territories cannot be the same color, right? So, on the ground of symmetry, what can I say is that, well, I don't need to do any of these, right, in this case, right? If I have a solution for that one, going down that branch, I will have a solution at this level for either of these. And if I have a solution for this one down this at this level, I will have a solution for that one. So that's one thing you want to build into the problem as well, in terms of saying, okay, there is some symmetry involved in there. I don't want to be duplicating the work. If I find a problem, so this tree, I'll never need to worry about any of this. So if I go all the way down and I fail, this means there's no way, no point for me to backtrack all the way to there and try this one as well, because I will fail as well. Or backtrack all the way up and try this one and that one, because I will fail as well, right? So any solution that you can find, an assignment, should be found, you should be able to find it by just going down this branch and making these choices. Obviously, there's no symmetry between these two, right? Right, because this is red and this one is blue. Yeah, because there is an issue there, right? What is the issue?
You already assigned red.
Yeah, exactly, so you have to be careful. So in this case, you have a bit more constraint. Right, you can't make this green, for instance, either. Well, you can make green. You already assigned red, so that's going to have an effect as well, because this is a neighbor of this. Any questions? Okay, good. So, how do we improve the backtracking? So remember, right, in the algorithm itself, you know, we have these various choice points, right, and we have also this bit there, which, you know, hopefully. Oh no, please! It's my laptop, I think. Oh, is that my laptop running out of battery? That's not possible. Right, that's a bit of an issue. Yeah, I think so. Right. Can any of you, actually I can't log in onto, can any of you log on to this? I think if you're a student you can.
It's the Windows.
Yeah, it's just, can one of you please log here? Because I think my, what? Yeah, well, where's the mouse? Yep, here. Yeah, something's, my computer's gone dead. Nice.
Is it on the website?
It is on the website, that's where I'm going. He's slow. Okay?
Yeah, but every computer is different.
Yeah. Well, as long as we get the browser, good. Shh. He's doing something really. He has to concentrate. I know, the louder you get, the more it's going to take, time is going to take me to get you all down. Hey? It is a possible, yeah, we don't want that. So, www.inf, yeah, I think they've not, yeah, you need to put the W. Yeah, wow, that is really difficult to read. Slash, yeah, courses. Yeah. Course, I think it's teaching. Oh, because you've gone to Ed.
Transport.
Yeah. Teaching first. With an A. You missed the A. That's all right. I'm putting you under pressure. Yeah, courses, or just taught courses. Informatics 2, Inf 2D, timetable, no, slides or whatever, it doesn't matter. This one. Wow. Oh, I hope you have. Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah, my documents, I think. All right. Thanks very much. Hold on, I need to change the. Thanks very much. Hey, here you go. Thanks very much. Right, you can't say I don't make the lecture exciting, right? Yeah. So, okay, where were we? Well, where was I? So, we're trying to improve the backtracking efficiency. Okay, let's see. How many minutes did we lose? 3? That's pretty good. So we have this general, we have the general purpose methods that we can, and these can give huge gains in speed. So what we want to do, so if you remember, there we had this as a choice point, that as a choice point, and we had this bit there. So we're going to look at this one first. Okay. So how do we go about choosing the variable that we're going to assign next? So we could randomly pick one, but hopefully there's more than that we can do, right? And then once we picked a variable, the next question is what order should we try its values one by one, right? And what inferences also should be performed at each step of the search? So each time we've assigned a particular value to a variable, we want to show whether, you know, try and look into the future and see what sort of effect this could have on the whole assignment problem, basically whether it can make it fail. So what we want to do, can we detect inevitable failure early? We want to be able to detect any failure that, you know, if the problem is going to fail without us having any choice being able to satisfy. So basically, if it's unsatisfiable, we want to do this quite early, right? Okay, so here's the bit that we talk about here. This is like, how do we choose the select the unassigned variable, right? So one way of doing this, right, which is well known, is to pick the variable which is the most constrained, right? So if we look at this problem, we're going to choose the variable with the fewest legal values, right? Let's assume we have this, and we decide to put this as red, right? Right, so when we're starting, actually, it's not actually the case. They all have the same particular number of values that they can be allocated to in this case. This problem is slightly different. We'll see how to deal with this in a second. So if this is our problem, what values can be given to each of these? It's 3, right? So they're all equally constrained in this case. But we can assume if we pick this one first and we make this red, what's the variable that's most constrained after this? Well, it's going to be either of these two, right? Because how many values can you pick for this one? Just 2, and only 2 values for this one. So if we pick this one first compared to before that one, we make it green, then what happens? What's the most constrained variable after this? It's this one, right? Because it can only be blue, right? So think of it like this, right? So if you have to go to the cinema, have you ever tried to do this, right? You have a group of friends, you have to go to the cinema, you go to a restaurant somewhere, and some friends have more restrictions than others in terms of what they eat or whatnot, right? Who do you try to accommodate first usually? It's those, it's always the same problem, right? It's those who have, you know, say, I'm only going to eat fish and something else or whatever on this day. So you try to say, because you're less constrained, you eat everything. Well, assuming, for instance, you ate everything. So you try to satisfy your friend who's going to have more constraints because it's a good friend, you want to go together. Say, okay, we'll go to a fish restaurant because you're going to eat fish because you don't eat everything, right, for instance. So that's one thing. So this is known as the minimum remaining values heuristic, right? Meaning that they have less, you know, you pick the variable that has more constraints on it, right? It's the friend, you have a group of friends, you want to go to a restaurant, you pick the friend who's the pickiest first to try and decide where to go. You don't try with the friend who's easiest, right? Because that's not good, because you have to revise the problem after that, right? To say, okay, let's go there, and the other one will say, I don't like that. So you might as well pick the guy who's the most difficult. So that's one thing. So then you go and say, okay, that's all very good, but maybe you have two difficult friends. They're both very difficult. What do you do, right? So the way you do and deal with this, so it's the same with the map coloring problem, right? When you start, you know, you have all of these can all take free variables, right? Free values. Which one do you pick? So what we can try and do if you have several variables which are equally constrained, equally picky, what you try and do is to say, okay, which is the one that's going to impose fewer constraints on the other variables, right? So if I choose this one, no, sorry, choose the variable that's going to put most constraints on the other variable, because by picking it, hopefully I can get a value for the others that's going to be much easier to get because I'm going to reduce the branching. So the next thing to do is you say, if I pick, I have two friends, they're all equally difficult, right? But this one lives just next door and the restaurant is very far away and the other one lives close to all the others and he can take them in their car. So maybe you should favor the one who has a car and can take everybody because, you know, you have more friends at the dinner, right? Because they have more constraints, there are more constraints from that one on the other friends, right? The one who can walk, well, tough. If he doesn't come, just one friend, right? But, no, maybe, no, okay, no, that's not true. He's your best friend. You've known him since school, right? Yeah, right. Oh, if your guy is a good-looking girl, she's a good-looking girl. Something like that, or vice versa. So anyway, so the tiebreaker among the most constrained variables is to take the one which is going to have the most constraints on the other variable. So it's the most constraining variable. So if we look at this and we use the degree heuristic there, oh, there's a little bit missing. That's what I added to my slide. Ooh. So if we look at this, what's the most constraining variable there? Yeah, it is South Australia because it's going to constrain all of these all the variables around it, right? So you pick it first, right? So if you pick this first, then what can you do next, right? So this one has how many values can this one take? Two. This one can take two values. Each of these can take two values, right? So you still got, they're all equally constrained. This one can take three. So what do you do now? So you pick one of them to decide you're going to try and satisfy. So you can pick Northern Territory in this case. So in this case, we pick this one because they're all equally constrained, but you know, and they're all also most constraining. Oh yeah, so which is the most constraining of these? So this one, is this most constraining? No, because it can only influence that one. This one can influence two, and this one can influence one, and this one can influence two. So the most constraining ones are this one, and that one, right? So we can pick either, so we pick this one. Now what do we do next? Why do we pick this one? Yeah. So this actually is not just about the degree heuristic. It's the one that you have only one choice left. It can only be red. So you're going back to the one which is most constrained here in terms of picking the next variable in this case. So really this should be saying, so this is what I added to my slide here, is to say this is picking using the most constraining value, well, using the most constrained variable, the MRV there, the minimum remaining values, and the most constrained variable. Right? Wow, we're not going to finish this, I think. So that's going to enable you to pick the variable. Well, once you've done this, what do you do next, right? So given a variable, what you're going to do, you're going to try to choose the least constraining value now. Because you pick your variable, I know this is the variable I want, right? What do I do? What value do I pick for this first? Because I'm going to enumerate through the values, hopefully, you know, keep it all consistent. Well, what you do is to pick the one that rules out the fewest values in the remaining variables. So you see, it's a look-ahead kind of step already almost, right? So if I assume I do this, you know, just to pick a different example, I do Western Australia first and do Northern Territory. Now, what do I have? I have a choice for what I can do for this particular variable there. If I make it red, what happens? Then I have one value left for South Australia, which can be blue, right? But if I make this blue, that's it. I have no values left for this one because that cannot be either of the colors because it's a neighbor to all three of these states or these territories, right? So then what I would pick the value for, if I'm picking this a value I need to give, this is the variable and I need to give it a value and I have a choice, the first one that I would pick is this one. This one is actually doomed, so I don't want this one. So you want to pick the one that's going to rule out the fewest value for the remaining variables, right? So first choice, what variable do I pick, right? You usually pick the one that has the minimum remaining values. But if there's a tie break, you have several of these which are equally constrained, you pick the one that's going to have fewer, most constraints on the other ones, right? Okay? Because hopefully you can fail early for this. Once you've done this, you need to find a value to give to the variable. Well, you need to find a set of values for the possible values. You need to do this in order. You want to order the values that you're going to try in turn. You want to try from the one that's going to make it more likely that you're going to solve the problem. So you pick the one that's going to have less of an issue on the others. Because the fact that I pick this, so if I pick this first, I would have to backtrack and go there, right? I don't want that. I want to ensure that, if possible, I'm going down one path only and never backtrack, right? So combining these heuristics actually makes 1,000 queens feasible, which is quite, you know, these are simple heuristics.
Also taking into account like symmetry.
Yeah, all these things as well, absolutely. Yep. So that's all very good. There is one more thing. So if you look at the algorithm again, well, it's there, I mentioned it there. So we have this bit which is the inference, right? Can we do something more? So actually we can. So this is where we call this idea what's known as forward checking. So forward checking is going to try and do some inference. As soon as you assign a value, for instance, it tries to look forward and say, what happens to the other variables, you know, by giving a particular value? It's easy to actually justify. So what it does is to keep track of the remaining legal values for unassigned variables, right? And you try to terminate the search, so by stopping, when any variable has no legal values, right? Let's look at this like this. So this is our initial map. These are all the possible colors in each of the domains for each of the variables, right? I say, okay, let's try to make Western Australia red, so it becomes